Welcome back, guys. DGS 205. Happy Wednesday, right? Wednesday? Okay.
Someday.
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know what I just thought of? I hadn't thought of in years. You recognize these signs?
The greater than, less than?
Yeah. I've never felt like more of a genius in my entire life than when they introduced this in third grade, and I got it, and some of the other kids were just like, I don't get it. And I was just like, oh, for the love of God. I just belittled them. Like, if the alligator's opening his mouth, then he's greater than. But
you got more food on that side.
Stand back. I'll handle it.
Yeah.
The alligator always wants more.
The candy today is reminding me of when I was in about like between like fourth and sixth grade. I wasn't a math whiz by any means, but we would have like math drills where you just try to solve an equation before another kid on the blackboard, and they motivated us with candy, and I did turn into a math whiz at that point. Like, if I knew I was going to get like a sucker or something, I'd be like, all right, I know this.
Dude,
I'm in the zone.
To this day, I almost remember what the problem was. We would go through in order and do word problems. And so, again, thinking I was a genius, I'm kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I have question number 12. And it's like, okay, a train leaves Cleveland at this time, blah, blah, blah. I figured it out. I think I got it because I had to go to the board and work it out. And then the person in front of me panicked and couldn't do her problem.
Oh,
so
no.
It fell to me.
Oh, you had to
new
do that
problem.
One, yeah.
So then I had to just like...
start over.
Yeah, which I couldn't do in real time.
Mm.
And I looked foolish.
Mm. Mm. I used to ask them if they could translate everything into a batting average.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything, but I knew how to do a batting average.
I did like word problems, though.
Really?
Most people hate word problems, but I'm such a word guy.
Yeah.
That's the only way that the numbers made sense
to
me.
Yeah, I liked them, too. Yeah. Same way.
I wonder if I could do that now. The train leaving the station thing. Because I'm pretty sure I'm smarter than when I was, like, 8.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure, but I mean, I don't exactly know.
Pretty sure I'm smarter than when
I
was little.
I'm not confident in my own skills. I would have to like take a class first, do some refreshing.
Yeah, let me hit a lecture.
Like, sometimes with my multiplication tables, I'm like, yeah,
let's do that for
49.
Our next game.
That's 49.
Yeah. We can do that for our next game on the show on Friday.
Let me do
word problems.
Yeah.
Who can do word problems?
People tune in for the first time in a while. It's like, I think they're just doing math now.
let me attend a lecture before I have to tell you what 9 times 8 is.
That was when I did my No One Dies a Load training yesterday, and the two women who were volunteering with me for the orientation were there because of the show. And so afterwards, we're talking about the show. And one of them listens more than the other, and she was just advocating the show so much and so complimentary. And she's like, here's why it's the greatest show ever. Like, you can tune in, and they can be so bawdy and immature and sophomoric in bathroom humor, and you can tune in, and it's Priest and Rabbi, or you can tune in, or there's a father who lost his son to suicide. And it's really true. I'm definitely patting myself and ourselves on the back right now, but you've been doing this long enough, Wheels, that there aren't shows that do that.
No, usually you pick a lane.
And for a good reason.
Right, it's hard.
Any consultant would tell you, nah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You got to be a sports guy, got to be the conservative guy, got to be this guy, that guy. And
most things are about picking a lane.
Yes.
But humans aren't like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Human beings are like what we're doing.
They messy.
Tell fart jokes and also talk about serious things.
Yes. Razor's Edge?
Absolutely. So Razor's Edge today, I don't mean this as a way of like picking on the younger generations at all, but I found this article and the title is Basic Etiquette is Dying. Here are 18 essential manners younger generations are no longer taught. So, like I said, this isn't about to be like, oh, and here's why Gen Alpha is going nowhere. I would like to go through this list of things that are supposedly going away, and we can kind of just have a little discussion. Should this go away? Was it ever like a good idea to begin with? That sort of thing.
Okay.
So the first thing they say is going away in our culture is saying thank you, please, and excuse me. First of all, have you guys noticed people saying that less as time goes on?
Now that you bring it up, probably so, but it wasn't to the level that I noted it.
Okay.
But as I think about it, there are just fewer please, thank yous, excuse me across the board.
Mm-hmm. I think the one I see leaving the most is the excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Like people just push past and they don't say anything. They're just and I'll excuse you.
I would say half the time I go to the grocery store, I don't get a thank you. And 25% of the time I go to the grocery store, the checker doesn't even acknowledge me.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
That's weird.
It doesn't me either, but I go to the auto checkout. It'd be weird if that thing did.
I went somewhere this morning. It wasn't the grocery store. It was an office. And I walked in and I was like, hello. And they didn't greet me. And then they were like, all right, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, hello to you too. It kind of hurt my feelings a little bit.
Pardon me. Yeah, that is a big thing with me. But we just sound like we're bitching now.
Hey, that's the point of Razor's Edge.
But I went to a restaurant where we've been, Rage. I'll tell you on the break because we both like it.
Okay.
And it was one of those, like, you know what makes me mad is when someone is rude to you so unnecessarily. Like, I get it if something's on fire in the kitchen, right? But I walked into this place where I've been many, many times, and there's a hostess desk, and there's a hostess standing there. And she was obviously having something going on with her iPad, you know, where who's going to sit at table 38, whatever. And there were four women standing there, and I said, have you checked in? They said, oh, yeah, go right ahead. So I go up there. I am 24 inches from this person. And I am not exaggerating. I stood there for 4 minutes before she even looked at me.
Mm.
I mean, all you have to do is go, hey, I'll be right with you.
Yep.
That's all you have to do. You can take 10 minutes as long as you just look at me and say, hey, I'll be right with you. I got a little thing going on here. No sweat, man. I'll go sit at the bar for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't even look up.
Well, do you think that's just never coming back? Because I was on Reddit the other day and people were talking about this exact thing, especially in like the service industry. And look, I'm not here to pick on service industry workers, but it's different now than it was 5 years ago. Like when you go into a place, it's just, you're going to have a different experience. People aren't going to be rolling out the red carpet as they once were. And in some cases, if you get like a bad worker or someone who doesn't care about their job at all, you not only feel like you're not getting good service, you feel like an inconvenience.
You feel stupid.
Yeah. And like you're doing something bad to them by showing up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're making them work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, sorry.
So they can make the monies.
All right. The next thing on the list is making eye contact. This is something that is going away. It's becoming less important with the younger generations.
I mean, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It says when another person doesn't look at you when you're talking, it can feel like they aren't listening, which causes friction in relationships.
Yeah. When you guys are, let's just stick with grocery shopping. When you're grocery shopping and you're encountering 100 people during your time, do you keep your eyes up and nod, hi, how you doing? Or do you pretty much put your head down and do your stuff?
I keep my eyes up depending, you know, for the most part, I am a big like, hey, if I make eye contact with you, I'm going to give you the closed mouth smile.
The like little nod.
Yeah. They're like, hello.
That's what I'm thinking when I do that.
And when you do that and someone doesn't return it,
then it's you feel
very hurtful. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, okay. Sorry.
Clear your throat.
I said, let's see. That one's not very good. Chewing with their mouths closed. This is something that is apparently going away. That's not something I noticed so much. But Andrew, you've noticed it.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I feel like I'm
among
like,
young people.
Amongst everybody. I just feel like that's one of those things that just people do less and less nowadays. I was told that no one would ever be chewing with their mouth open ever. And if I did it, I was an animal. And I feel like, and so I'm like, I became like hypersensitive to it. And now I feel like I see it everywhere.
I haven't noticed that.
And I'm like, that guy gets to do it.
How come I don't get to chew with my mouth open?
How come I don't get to slop food all over the table from
my
mouth?
I only remember one sit-down meal at my grandma and grandpa Smith's, my mom's mom and dad. And they lived in the country, and they were country. They were farmers. And they seemingly were incapable. Sorry to crap on my grandparents. But incapable of chewing with their mouths closed or talking without their mouth full of food. And unfortunately, the meal was chicken and dumplings.
Oh, those
and
are so
I
good,
still
though.
Remember it. I think my grandpa had a dumpling in his ear at one point. They're just like, nah, 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 and I'm like, oh my God. That was the same trip. I was about 10, and we spent the night, the only time we spent the night, and there was a fold-out bed, and when they unfolded it, a fold-out couch, when they unfolded it, in the crease was filled with dead mice.
Oh, no.
So there were probably a dozen dead mice. And I'm like, okay, well, what hotel are we staying in? And my mom and dad are both like, we're staying here. Like, we're not going to hurt their feelings. You're going to sleep in the bed. I'm like, I'm going to sleep in the dead mouse bed? And in the living room with it was a coal-burning stove. And for whatever reason, the manufacturer made the grates into the face of the devil.
Okay.
And so I was sleeping in the dead mouse bed and just having the fiery devil face looking at me.
Yeah.
After your delicious meal of chicken and dumplings.
And no indoor plumbing.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So you had to go outside?
Well, I didn't. I would have peed on that couch before I went outside. That wasn't happening. Every spider in Benton, Illinois lived in that outhouse.
Next up, we have holding the door for others. This is something that I have definitely noticed falling off. Again, not to just make this segment completely about complaining, but it kind of. I mean, I feel like I always... At least I'm not like, let me get that for you. And I wait for you to walk through the door. But I always like hold the door open with my hand for someone else. There's plenty of times where that doesn't happen or you do it for someone and they don't even say thank you.
Yeah.
Just the worst.
Just, yeah. That happens a lot at like gas stations and stuff when you're running in and out.
What happened to just common decency, people? Last one we'll do, covering your mouth when coughing or sneezing.
I'm not the greatest at that, so I can't cast aspersions.
Seems like I'm the reason the list exists.
Yeah.
But I started feel like trend. I've noticed that.
You what?
I do feel like people have stopped doing that like in
since
general.
COVID?
Just in general. I don't know.
Oh, you
think that it would pick up in more since COVID. People would be covering their mouths like more. But I feel like I see it less.
Oh, man. When I was at the airport the other day, I was sitting next to this guy who had a very wet cough. And I'm like, man, this sucks. Yeah. And then I look over and he's wearing a mask. And I'm going, do you have COVID right now? And you're just wearing a mask in public. Like, I didn't know how to feel. You know, do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
my poor daughter Phoebe has misophonia.
Oh, okay.
Where she cannot stand to hear people chew or... Mm. Cough or especially clear their throat, and it's really a thing. Like if she's in class, and it's going to be bad during the cold and flu season of the fall and winter,
especially on a college campus.
Yeah, anytime that someone's doing that kind of thing just makes her crazy.
Goo.
Always been one of my favorite Rush songs. One of the least Rush songs that Rush ever did, but it's just cool.
Bit of a deep cut.
It's just a good rock and roll tune.
Hmm?
You know how you think back on things in your life, big things and little things. You're like, oh, I think I missed an opportunity there. I forgot what made me think of it. I do remember what made me think of it. Last night I was watching TikToks and the Sean Ryan show. And he had this guy on who we should get. His code name is Shrek. And he is a Delta Force guy and he's done everything. So anyway, that made me think of, I think I missed it. I know I missed an opportunity. I probably wouldn't have wanted it, but back during the Michael Brown riots, I was doing Fox News. And so I was on with Megyn Kelly a bunch and a couple of the other shows. And I was like their St. Louis guy for this. And on the night that they did the verdict, I guess it was, they hired a group of bodyguards for me, three former Navy SEALs. That's what made me think of it. And they were not kidding around. They were not laughing. They're not smiling. They didn't care about me being charming. I was the protectee, and and they would have taken someone down to protect me. And we're in Clayton, where they're going to announce it, and nothing happens because Fox thought that's where everything's going to happen. So I am literally at Tani Sushi, having sushi with these three Navy SEALs and watching the television, and Ferguson's on fire. And it's like 9:30 p.m. And Megyn Kelly or Hannity or someone's producer calls me and says, hey, you don't gotta, but do you want to go to Ferguson? If you go to Ferguson, then we'll go to you and we'll put you on the air and it'll be a big deal. And I didn't because I just wanted to go home. I mean,
that's such a natural thing.
I'm a media person.
Yeah.
And back then I was way more aggressive than I am now about it and trying to be a bigger deal than I try now. And I wanted to be on national news. And that was a perfect opportunity. Like, I don't think I would have been the next Wolf Blitzer because I did a hit. But millions, I think that night Fox News set a record. I really do, for the most watched thing ever.
Mm.
And that would have been me. But I just thought about going there and what a cluster it was and the hassle. And I thought about my warm, cozy bed. And I was like, I think I'm going to pass. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah.
I just don't know where I would park.
I'm eating sushi.
It happens like that sometimes.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
Just have to deal with it.
Yep.
Because, you know, I mean, you make a call based on what you're feeling in the moment.
Yeah, but that was the wrong call. Well, any way you cut it, that was the wrong call.
I agree, but I mean, everybody still does that. That's why you can't
kill yourself
over things when you pick something. You're like, yeah, I picked the wrong door there. Well, yeah, because you didn't know it was the wrong door. Because you could have gone, and it could have gotten way out of control, and something terrible could have happened.
True.
You didn't know.
It's a good point.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
So we are unable to talk to Ricky tomorrow because it's day game, 2:10 game, so we will be off. So we're going to talk to him 2 days in a row. Good to have Wheeler back. I love talking to Rick, but I have to carry the heavy end of the couch when Wheels isn't here. With all these velos and all these sorts of things.
You just calling me a nerd is what you're doing.
Rick, I want to ask you a question I asked Wheeler at lunch today, and he had a very strong answer. And I was asking him that, from the standpoint of ownership in the front office and such, everyone knows it's going to be a busy offseason. Is it more important to build a better team for 2025 and beyond, even if it might be a little dull and boring? Or is it more important to make some moves that excite the base and get people back into Busch Stadium?
Well, you know, that's actually the crossroads that the Cardinals are at right now. And, just again, happy to be talking to you guys 2 days in a row. I'm getting kind of used to this now. But the the reality is, if you take a step backwards, you might be able to take three steps forwards. And we're in unprecedented territory in terms of, at least in my lifetime in St. Louis, of the number of fans that came to the ballpark this year. That's a new thing that creates a financial issue now that the Cardinals are dealing with big time. And of course the TV contract that we've talked about. So I think there's some very real economic things in play here that are going to trump whatever makes the most sense baseball-wise. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, of course, but I think the idea is if you have to be kind of slow in developing so that you can be good 2 years from now, I mean, I'm not so sure the Cardinals will do that. I don't really know. I know we're going to find out in a week or so, but I don't have a clear picture which way they're going to go.
Yeah, my position on Rick is I think it's a simple one, is that the moves to sell tickets are super hard to pull off, and there's only so many triggers you can pull on that, right? Like,
yeah.
You have to go sign a Juan Soto caliber guy or another Sonny Gray. It's got to be a super high-end player to sell any tickets, right? Because normal moves get people happy, but they're not being like, I'm buying season tickets because of this. You sign Juan Soto, you're probably going to, but you're not going to spend $600 million on one player for this franchise. It's just not going to happen. There are only about four or five that are going to spend that kind of money on players. And the other kind would be more symbolic, like a big name addition. Yeah. Like, I don't know, Albert's coming back. But even that, if he's coming back, I don't mean as a player, but let's say he's coming back in some role. I don't know that people are buying for that. I think consistent winning is what Cardinals fans want, and you build toward that.
No, I agree with that. I think you said it better than I did. I think, honestly, winning is the bottom line of it. And then the question is, how do you win best? And, the Cardinals are clearly going in a direction of young players right now. What we saw yesterday here in Colorado was, now I understand it's Colorado and it's September, so let's not you know, like throw a big party or anything. But right. but the point is, and actually Colorado's playing very well in September too. But the point is, you know, the Mason Wins, the Jordan Walkers, the Thomas Ajayis, that's pretty cool to watch these guys play, and they're going to make some mistakes because they're young. So, you know, the idea is to win, but you also want to build while you're winning, and it's the age-old question in development. Do you want to develop players or do you want to win? And the answer is yes. I mean, if you can do both, you'll do it. But, you know, I agree with you. I don't think a single player moves Soto anybody. I mean, we could sign Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, and I don't think that's going to make a difference until folks come to the ballpark, have a good time because they see the team winning. I think that's going to be the thing that kind of gets it going. But I do think this. I think it will steamroll fast. If the Cardinals win, it will steamroll fast.
Yes.
Because I felt that way during the last homestand. We had 40,000 plus a couple of days, and it was that great Cardinal feeling again in the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, that's the hard part.
You know, it'd be a weird feeling. I'm just sitting here, going through the roster. I don't know Miles Michaelis. I'm sure I would like him if I knew him.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. But he's in a position now. We've talked about this. The three of us on the air have talked about this. That the sad fact of it is that we owe him $18 million or so for next year, and he hasn't been great this year. And what a position to be in to think. On the plus side, I'm going to get $18 million, regardless of who that comes from. But on the human side, if we do let Miles Michaelis go, like, I played so relatively poorly that the team is basically paying me to go away. I mean, that's why we love sports, because there's just so much emotion in it.
Yeah, there really is. And from the player's point of view, and now I got the Players Association hat on, which I was a player rep for a long time. In fact, a National League rep. During one of our negotiating times with the basic agreement, I was in those meetings with all the big, you know, all these big flies, and it was heady stuff for me, I must say. But, you know, one of the things that players all take the stance is, look, we played college baseball without getting paid. Can't say that anymore. But we played college baseball, and then you play minor league baseball for 4 years, and you make $10,000 a year for 4 years. I mean, literally. And then you get a chance to be in the big leagues, and you are cost controlled for 4 more years. And by the time you get past that, you're talking about 2% of players that sign to play professionally. So those guys feel like they're getting paid for the time that they didn't get paid the 10 years prior.
Right.
So I don't think there's any guilt, nor should they feel that, especially when guys get hurt or get old. I mean, the effort's there. And if a guy's not trying, then that's a different story. But certainly the Cardinals don't have guys like that.
Yeah. So I wanted to spin off of that, Rick, because that's the thing I think gets missed sometimes is every one of these guys is really competitive. They don't want to stink. There are very few.
Right.
I'm sure you've experienced it. I have a little bit of guys that once they get paid, they don't care. But that's super rare. Super rare, because you spend your life competing and trying to be better than the person that you're competing against in the moment. That's what you do. The question I wanted to spin this off of is at what point is there a point? Is it different for everybody, Rick, in your experience, that what you've done all along no longer works and it's time to change? How hard is that?
Yeah, changing is hard, but you're not going to change the competitive part. I think that's part of your competitive part, is saying, I want to do well. What do I need to do to get back to that? And honestly, at the end of my career, I tried every pitch ever created. I threw a forkball, it didn't work. I threw sidearm, it didn't work. I did everything but throw right-handed, and I knew that wasn't going to work. But you try stuff, and, you know, the competitive stuff. I played golf here in Denver with Brad Thompson today, and trust me, we were competitive.
Yeah, right.
we had to get the juices flowing, and neither one – I mean, that's part of why we like it, and it's part of the way that we're geared. And you know, you're trying to do better, and you don't like it when you have a bad swing. Now that's the real minor leagues of golf that he and I are playing. But you know, it doesn't really matter what league you're in; you're still geared that way. And players definitely don't enjoy not doing well, no matter what their paycheck says.
Rick, you'll love this one. So I was a sprinter in college, and college was a very long time ago. And about a year and a half ago, we went to Florida, and I took my kids and I took my daughter's boyfriend, who was a 17-year-old athlete. And I bet him that I could beat him in a 40-yard dash. And I said something silly like, if I beat you, you have to stop dating my daughter. And if you win, I'll give you $1,000. And I forgot all about it. And at one point, we're on the beach and Phoebe goes, hey, why don't you guys race? and so we did. And I was... I would have bet every penny I have. I was a college sprinter. I was also 59.
Yeah.
And he beat me by about a step and a half, which I was, in hindsight, pretty proud of. I was crestfallen. I was heartbroken. I was shocked that at almost 60, a 17-year-old athlete had outran me. But, I mean, you just get in your head what you can do, and then your body disagrees.
So I'm curious on follow up to that. Which hamstring did you pull doing that? I mean, that's the other issue. That
all three of them.
17-year-olds don't even know they have hamstrings.
No.
So when you're 59, you sure know. I mean, and that's part of it. Obviously, you know, atrophy and the law of entropy. I mean, we're all going to kind of diminish as time goes. But your brain doesn't always tell you that. When we do fantasy camps, it's amazing to watch guys. The first time they swing a bat, Kevin's heard us tell this spiel before many times, you swing the bat and everybody starts to take off towards first base and they basically become a lawn dart. I mean, they fall down, maybe hurt a hamstring or a calf or something, but you literally, because your mind tells you that your legs can do this.
That's right.
And your legs veto it. They really do. And so, you know, but the idea is to keep the fun part of it. I mean, I still run in races. I still run in races in St. Louis slowly, and sometimes I walk them, but that's what I can do because that's kind of how I'm geared. And I think that's a good thing to keep you as young and vibrant as possible.
Well, when Wheels and I did batting practice at Busch Stadium and I was playing shortstop and I was fielding guys like me, no one is hitting ropes. And I swear, every ball that came my way looked like lightning.
It all gets on you fast, doesn't it?
It does. It really. It's humbling. It's humbling. But you know that's again, it's part of the love of sport. And you know, you're probably. So here's another deal that they say. They used to say that the baseball player is at his best. This was a study done in the 80s. That in terms of paying players, but you don't play pitchers, especially past age 27, because they're going to get worse. All pitchers get worse after 27. I'm not sure that's not younger now. I don't know what number they say, but you know, that was the common thought. And so to think about that, once you get into the 50s and 60s, then you know, we're a far cry, Dave, from 27.
Well, you know, especially, Rick, you bring up a good point. And especially when you have guys throwing 101, 102, it's not Greg Maddux anymore. You know, that's not really rewarded.
It's not. But let me give you another funny example that just happened on our Friday night show that we did. Mike Claiborne and I, last Friday, we had Dave Veers, who was a Cardinals closer, in 01, 2, and 3. So that's not, you know, 80 years ago. That's 20 years ago. And he's, you know, he's youngish. I mean, he's probably in his upper 40s, maybe 50, I guess. But, you know, still fit and all that. When he threw out the first pitch, he told me that he got a series of two cortisone shots to throw out the first pitch at Busch Stadium. So, and I said, you did what? He said, yeah, I wanted to make sure I could get. And it's like, you're going to get a – I mean, think about that. I mean, how geared up he must have been to realize that, okay, I want to see if I can throw the ball 60 feet. And I thought that was an amazing story, but it doesn't surprise me.
Rick, do you feel like at your age you were in better shape because of your career, or did it take it out of your body?
I think I'm in better shape because I had the career. If I was a middle linebacker playing football, I might think differently if I was in a different sport. But I think that the things that I did a lot of stretching. I did, you know, and of course, a lot of my stuff was on my arms throwing, and my left arm is fully crooked. It doesn't, I can't straighten out my
Don't
left arm. But that's, you know, it doesn't, you know, the degree of flexibility is really low, but it doesn't hurt me. So, I have some arthritis, but it's not, I still think movement is still king. I mean, and every doctor will tell you that, keep moving. And so I think the baseball movements, I think, have helped me stay more fit as I've gotten older.
Have you seen any of your contemporaries who get up into their 50s and 60s but can still really throw?
Really throw, not too many of them. I mean, not the throwing part. Let me think of, you know, Scott Terry, who's always been able to throw.
Yeah.
He's my age, and you know, and he did that. I'll tell you, the guys that stay in baseball and become a coach and throw every day.
Yep.
I mean, those are the, and Scott did that for a bit, and he did lessons and all that stuff. I think that kind of helps you if there is some, you know, atrophy that happens if you stop throwing and your shoulder flexibility kind of doesn't work anymore. But there's not too many guys that can rush it up there in the 70s anymore that are my age or around my age.
I will say though that as a guy that's thrown, I don't know, for 20 years, 300-400 pitches of BP a week during the baseball season, there's no question it makes a difference.
Helps. No,
oh, makes it so much better. So much better.
So, Kevin, have you, in any of your travels, Kevin, did you run across two guys that were contemporaries of mine that played baseball post-career in men's leagues in St. Louis? Greg Matthews is one.
Yep.
And Pat Perry's another. I mean, they played in the over 40 leagues, and they may still be playing. In fact, Mark Whitten, hard-hitting Mark Whitten, who hit 4 home runs in 1 game for the Cardinals against Cincinnati, which is a crazy feat, he still plays in men's leagues now down in Florida. So, yep. I mean, Some people still have the bug and keep.
See a few of those guys, kind of in between where you and I are. That when they go, you see them at fantasy camp. Like, and I haven't been in a while, but like Tito Landrum struck me that way, that he was still hitting the crap out of the baseball. My buddy Scott Cooper is in that kind of shape. Yeah, I mean it's, but he, you know, Coop's a little bit between the two of us, I think, closer to my age.
When I was 32, I grounded out to second base against Greg Matthews. And I high-fived everyone on my team. For real. I might as well have hit it over
it in play.
The left field fence.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
You won a World Series. That's awesome. That's
have a great game. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
254 DGS. Dave Murray coming up at 3:30. Bernie Miklas will join us at 4. Man, I had a low point on the road today.
Oh?
I was tailgated. Severely tailgated by a school bus.
What?
Oh.
Yes. Yes. I sensed a looming object, and I looked up, and my entire rearview mirror was just yellow, and I could see the guy. He's an old white guy with a gray beard and glasses. He's just kind of glaring at me, and I looked down. I'm going 62, which is pretty fast in a Jeep, and this guy was just on my ass.
Wow.
Yeah.
He had to get them kids somewhere.
So buses are not supposed to do
no.
that.
Well, they're not. I mean, I'm supposed to be faster than a bus.
Yeah, but I mean, you're going the speed limit. A bus is not supposed to exceed the speed limit, a school bus.
So I'm telling you, because not only do I drive a Jeep that is not fast, but I have a little bit of driving anxiety, so I'm fine driving 60 and not and taking 2 minutes to get, you know, more to get somewhere.
Yeah.
Driving 60 in St. Louis is like jogging on the highway. I mean, you are just going to get ran over.
You're going to get passed.
School bus is like, you know how mean these kids are?
On 70, back when I was driving 70, there literally was not a day that someone didn't pass me going over 100.
Oh, it happens every day.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I drive home on it every day. I don't drive 100. I go faster than 60, I'm not going to lie. But I don't drive 100. And normally, I would say my normal speed is probably low 70s. And people just blow by me like I'm standing there.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.